Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Sunday for Sunday, April 21st, 2024. We've got another great show for you this week. Kevin Walsh of Groom Law Group and one half of the Legal Eagles will be here. And we'll be taking a look back at one of our recent segments, is Medicare enough to support an aging population? So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode of BRN Sunday. Well, we're going to kick things off as we always do with a look at what's happening on Capitol Hill. And we've got some important insight onto the new fiduciary rule today. Joining me now on the line, Kevin Walsh is a principal with Groom Law Group. That's an employee benefits law firm based in Washington, D.C. And we fondly refer to Kevin and his colleague, David Levine, as the Legal Eagles. Kevin, thanks so much for popping by the program this morning.
Jeff, thanks for having me on. You know, it's only one eagle flying alone, so I'm a bit of a tortured poet being here all by myself.
Oh, I think the audience feels so sorry for you, Kevin. But we, in all seriousness, we do appreciate you and David coming on, and we appreciate you guys splitting up today because we know how busy you are. All right, Kevin, let's start with some important news around the fiduciary rule. You and David had covered this many times on the network over the last several months, but there's been some potential developments.
There have been, and we've been covering it a bunch because with this rulemaking, there's been developments one after another. They've been coming quickly. You know, basically, the Department of Labor issued its proposal on November 3rd in the Federal Register, and it looks like, you know, within a week, within 2 weeks, likely within a week, the final rule will be issued, promulgated out in public. So for folks who are Taylor Swift fans, we won't have to wait another fortnight for the final rule. So this is significant because, you know, proponents of the rule are saying that, you know, essentially what the Department of Labor is doing is they're trying to update the rules around when someone is interacting with an investment professional, that those rules need to be updated based on the shift from defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans and IRAs that's happened in the last, you know, 30, 40 years. Opponents of the rule would point out that other regulators have done that. So, you know, you've got the SEC with regulation best interest 2018. You've got the NAIC, which has updated its best interest rules around annuity distribution in the past year. And you've had other developments. And ultimately, what we're seeing is the Department of Labor working to finalize this rule, which, you know, seems somewhat like the rule they promulgated in 2016, which, you know, lost in a court fight. They're trying to develop this rule in a way where it would withstand a challenge. But ultimately, what we're careening towards is, you know, a rule is going to be issued either this week or the following week. And if it tracks the proposal, it's going to scoop up a number of conversations that have traditionally not been, you know, fiduciary conversations. So, mm-hmm. You know, fiduciary, you think trust law, you think parent-child. And here, you know, fiduciary could include conversations like, you know, should I open an account with you? Should I hire you to manage my money? You know, are you selling me an investment product? Well, if you're selling me the product, you should have a fiduciary interest in me. Mm-hmm. And it is attractive to say there should be a high care standard for these conversations. And so we'll have to see what DOL does. I mean, I think the caution is that, you know, the SEC and other regulators have already pretty thoroughly occupied this space. And as a result, once we see this rule, you know, we'll break it down for you. But the messaging is pretty clear that there's going to be legal challenges. The rule cleared kind of White House review very quickly. And there were actually still meetings scheduled with stakeholders after the rule cleared review. Those meetings were canceled. And I think the cancellation of the meetings and completion of review before those meetings occurred, it really sent a signal to both sides where, you know, essentially the administration is saying, you know, we have what we need. We're not interested in talking to you. We know there's going to be litigation.
But Kevin, just interrupt for a second. Doesn't that send the wrong message? Like, it's rulemaking is ongoing. So if it's not this rule, it's another rule. So don't you want to always keep the dialogue open with the industry? I'm just asking as an outsider. Who's not in D.C.
I do think the agencies and the White House want to create dialogue with the regulator community, and I think that's an important thing to recognize. And you know, in some ways, the department is a good partner. But with some aspects of rulemaking and certain rules, it does seem as though there's a desire to, you know, complete a rulemaking because, you know, while rulemaking is ongoing in the abstract, specific rules are finalized, published, promulgated, and become final agency action. You know, you could do a subsequent rulemaking process, but, you know, for folks who are working on a project, they do have a human desire to end the project at some point.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so with this, it's not that they're never going to think about fiduciary again. It's that they wanted to finish the process of promulgating their final fiduciary rule so that it would take legal effect.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And as someone who has managed lots of projects and worked on lots of projects, I always have appreciated the finality and moving on to the next thing. So it doesn't drone on because we've all been involved in whatever project where, hey, what about this? And it continues to come up. So I understand that. Kevin, if I could just, I don't want to interrupt your flow, but I want to ask, when would we, the rule comes out, it's in its final form. How long does it take to file challenges, legal challenges? Because obviously there are going to be people, stakeholders that are not satisfied, they're dissatisfied, I guess is the right word. How long does it typically take to file a challenge to something? And would that stay the implementation of the rule? Meaning,
so,
go ahead.
You're asking great questions. And, you know, realistically, folks have different strategies. You know, from a litigation standpoint, there are some folks who view challenging right away as the right strategy. You know, there's others who I've talked to about different things who think that you really need to wait until the rule's about to take effect. So once the rule's published, there'll usually be like an effective date, 30 days later, 60 days later, 6 months later, whenever that is. And so there are different camps in terms of, you know, thoughts in terms of what's going to be the most effective in terms of signaling to a court that you've really tried to do as much as you can before suing. And so I can't speculate on how fast the lawsuits are going to come. But I'd be surprised if, you know, if it's published and then there's an effective date of, let's say, you know, 60 days later. I'd be surprised if there wasn't a lawsuit filed in the window between when it's published and when it takes effect. And you know, without seeing the final rule, I don't know what the effective date is going to be. In the proposal, it was a 60-day effective date, but there are reasons to suspect that the department may give people more time to develop the compliance systems.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that because any rule change means advisors and interest, I'll call them interested third parties that work that are going to be affected. They need to build processes and change their processes to adapt to this new rule. And because they've received, I guess, the rule in draft form, they kind of know what's happening and they've commented. But I would suspect that those procedures will take more than 60 days to change. So could there be a grace period?
Could be a grace period. And, you know, when we look at the final rule, that's something we'll look for. You know, one of the things that folks have been surprised by was how quickly this rulemaking happened, you know, going from November 3 proposal to, in all likelihood, you know, end of April publication. If you then had a 60-day effective date, you'd basically do, you know, first look for the public to effective in an 8-month period. With rulemaking that redefines a relationship between buyers and sellers, or that requires new systems for annuity distribution, or that require, you know, very different structures than the SEC and NAIC structures that have regulated or you know, that have regulated this activity in the past. You know, 8 months seems like a fair amount of time to you and me for many things in life. But 8 months really isn't a lot of time to go from seeing a proposal to implementing a proposal.
Yeah,
to making it actionable. Also, because, you know, with a proposal, a lot of the time things get proposed and don't get finalized. So, you know, in all likelihood, there's going to be changes between the proposal and final rule, which mean that, you know, even if you took that proposal and then spent the intermediate 6 months just grinding every day to be able to execute, in all likelihood, there'll be changes in the final rule, in at least, you know, tweaks, modifications in some different ways that will be surprises. And as a result, you know, even if you spent those 6 months, you're going to have to step back and lose some of the work you had already done.
And last question, Kevin, because you've been very generous with your time. If I'm a plan sponsor or if I'm a consumer listening to this conversation, what should well, let's talk, let's focus on the plan sponsor. Forget, the consumers are important, but I think that is a different episode and a different program. So, knowing that this rule's coming out, if I'm a plan sponsor, meaning I sponsor a retirement plan of which a record keeper is performing services, I may have independent parties providing financial advice. What are things that I need to be thinking about, regardless of whether or not the rule is final, it's challenged, et cetera? What should I be thinking about in terms of crafting my agreements, my processes, and my procedures?
So the big thing for plan sponsors is going to be that there's likely going to be some significant changes made to contracts in the not too distant future. When you interact, when your contracts come up for renewal, when you do an RFP for new vendors, just expect to see different terms than you saw prior to the rulemaking. And some of those rules will be designed to reflect compliance with this, and others will be designed to reflect, the changes the department's making and, the impact they're having on the offerings that vendors have in the retirement marketplace. So I think the big thing is that if you have, if you're a really big plan and you use your own paper, your own contracts, you're probably going to get more pushback from service providers. And if you're a smaller plan and you've gotten comfortable with your current service providers, you really have avoided repapering things for a while, in all likelihood, the next year or two is going to see a flurry of repapering.
Yeah. Well, truth be told, there's going to be a lot of change and change to operations and procedures. So I think this is probably going to be top of mind at a lot of fiduciary quarterly meetings that happen around around these plans. Kevin, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for popping by. Give our best to David Levine, and we look forward to having you both back on the program again very soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Jeff, and thank you, listeners.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a great, wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Welcome back. And on Friday, I sat down with Anne Montgomery. She's with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And we discussed whether Medicare can support an aging population. Let's give that one a listen.
Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Anne Montgomery is with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Anne, it is so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun conversation, I think, and informative. Let's take a step back, though, and let's talk about our demographics, because America, and we've covered it on the network, and I presume elsewhere and other media outlets have covered this as well. America is aging, and there are going to be a lot more of us who are 50 and older, and that could potentially put a strain on some of our infrastructure here in the United States.
Absolutely. You know, this really is. I'm a late boomer, so I just recently turned 65. And with the numbers, you know, everything is really going to shift. I think it's by 2030 that we have 21%, you know, a fifth of the population, a little bit over that, that will be 65 and older, and it will tip toward having more people over 65 than children. So the question for society is, how do we make those later years that we now have into much more productive and valuable years, both for the individual and for society? So we have a lot to do.
We do, and one of the, I guess, bellwether programs, one of the programs that we're going to talk about this morning is Medicare. And Medicare is a very popular program, especially for those age 65 and older. I guess my first question is Medicare, as it's set up today, is it able to handle this influx of our aging population? So all the people that we're talking about going to reach age 65 and above in several years, can Medicare sustain this aging population?
That's a big question, and thank you for that. And it's something that we talk about all the time. And as you know, I do some work for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. I also do some work for an organization called the Center for Innovation, which is a steward of the Greenhouse Project, which builds small cottage-style nursing homes and kind of flips around the way that nursing homes are usually managed and run. So there are so many things really that we need to do. We need to update Medicare. It really does it would benefit from reform so that it becomes less kind of acute and medical oriented and better at supporting the needs of people who are older, who need not just medical care, but a whole range of supportive services, which Medicare in its original form, as designed way back in 1965, does not cover as statutory benefits. And there are many ways of expanding the program to do that and to save money, really. People end up in the ER, the emergency room, in the hospital, sometimes in skilled nursing stays that they may not need quite a bit because they don't have enough support to help them stay at home or wherever they choose to live with a little bit of daily help.
Yeah, and you bring up a really interesting point. Traditionally, Medicare has been for medical expenses, but as people age, and I should also say they're aging, but they're also living longer. That's a good thing. I think anybody on the tail on the back nine like myself, aging and living longer is a good thing. But there's a lot of services. I'm thinking about long-term care. You mentioned some of them. Does Medicare support some of these things that I would need, for example, at age 75, if I needed some assisted living or I needed to bring an outside caregiver in?
Yes and no. And for example, Medicare has a home health benefit, which is a good benefit, but has some serious restrictions that make it hard to use if what you're trying to do is prevent further deterioration or to prevent, you know, illness from getting the best of you so that you end up needing to actually move into a different place like a nursing home. It's kind of an awkward benefit, really. You have to be, quote, homebound, and that has some kind of tricky parameters. Yes, you can go out, but only if it is very taxing and difficult, and you can only go out for certain purposes, like going to church and so on. You can get some home health aid, you know, actual activities of daily living, you know, the usual sort of supports, eating, bathing, toileting, those kinds of supports. Up to 20 hours in an episode, but that's not really widely understood by a lot of home health agencies or even the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. If you call 1-800-MEDICARE, they may not give you the best information about the extent of your home health benefits. So there's an educational issue there, right? That we need to clarify. Really, what is the home health benefit in Medicare? Can we make it better? And there's been some interesting work on that. I want to give a shout out to the Center for Medicare Advocacy on that because they've been working at this for a number of years and even ended up filing a lawsuit called the JIMO lawsuit, which took on HHS and said, you know, it's not just people who are improving who ought to get home health services, but people who are just trying to maintain, you know, their function and who may in fact have a chronic progressive condition like multiple sclerosis, that means they will decline, or Parkinson's disease, but they too, you know, should have access to the home health benefit. And they won that case. And so the home health benefit in Medicare is slowly, but we need to speed this up, morphing into a more useful benefit to help people maintain their function, but it has a long way to go. So those kinds of issues, they're kind of gnarly and in the weeds, but we need to work more at them and clarify how this particular benefit can be much more useful. And then there are benefits that we don't yet have in original Medicare. We could talk about those if you want, and we should add them.
Yeah, and I want to do that over the commercial break. And by the way, anybody who's under 50 and watching this program, pay attention, because you're going to be there too. I once said that at age 22. Don't worry about me, but here I am 28 years later at age 50. Well, I'm 50. I'll be 52. These are very important topics. So regardless of age, you need to pay attention.
Well, that is certainly an important topic, and one that I know that we will continue to cover here on the Broadcast Retirement Network. And that wraps up this episode of BRN Sunday. Have a topic of interest, somebody you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Then visit our website. Hey, we're back again tomorrow morning for another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.